Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
And welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast at thepodiumgame.com. I am Jason Mann, and with me as always is Rich Craich. Rich, great to be with you.
Yeah, so Merry Christmas to you. This is an episode we've been planning for a little while, and I'm really excited to do it. It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about some Christmas games that the NBA has put out for us over the years. The Christmas Day has sort of become an NBA tradition. In fact, it dates back to 1947. They actually played games back in the BAA, the league that preceded the NBA. That was the first game played for the league, and the New York Knicks beat the Providence Steamrollers.
Would you say they steamrolled the Steamrollers?
It was 89-75. I don't know. it's pretty good. That's a decent margin. I don't know if steamrolling is quite there, but.
Yeah, no, it's got to be at least, I think, 20.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
It's going to be a full-out steamroll, correct? I don't know.
I would agree with
Maybe
that.
Maybe someone can let us know. Yeah. But.
So.
Oh, God. Oh, I'm looking through these. 1949, the Denver Nuggets defeated the Sheboygan Redskins. Oh, so there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, Sheboygan Redskins. Yeah, go Sheboygan. Yeah, early NBA is weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of just weird, like, there's just cities that don't make sense to have, you know what I mean? Like, you always see these, and you're like, Fort Wayne sucks. Like, yeah. No offense to people that live in Fort Wayne, but you're just like, really, Fort Wayne? And, like, yeah. You know, just random cities that just, like, have teams, you're just like, I don't know why they
well,
have a team.
Well, I mean, it was kind of like
like, why does Rochester have a
it
team?
It was mostly, like, a small town attraction, and it was mostly, like, Indiana and New York, Northeast, and, you know, there's kind of a couple of regions where basketball was hot enough that they could kind of support the teams, and then sort of the league grew a little bit in the mid-50s and kind of froze the smaller markets out, and, you know, they moved to bigger cities, and, you know, they kind of evolved from there. But, yeah, it's weird, you know, just how many teams really fell by the wayside during that. But, yeah, so basically every year apparently from 67 to now, except for 82 and the 98 lockout, there has been a Christmas game on national TV. Since then, and I believe every year there have been games at least on Christmas.
And I've watched every single one.
Even we did. We watched every single game
prior to my birth.
Prepare for this, yeah. So,
before this, yeah, we've. That's why I said it's been months prepping. At the NBA, after our last podcast, we mentioned we wanted the NBA to send us every game they ever have. They obliged, and so we've been doing that
really
for the past week.
Yeah,
past week, I have done nothing. I look like Howard Hughes. I have a giant beard and big nails because I've just been watching every Christmas game. And let me tell you, I'm ready to talk about some. So
I'm pretty excited. you put in more effort than I have to do this. But the first game we're going to talk about is the Atlanta Hawks versus the Phoenix Suns in Christmas of 1970. This was apparently the first of six nationally televised Christmas games that were in Phoenix.
This
was in the midst of that. This is according to Robert Bradley, who's a basketball historian at the APBR forum. Apparently they kind of were doing like a tradition there, which seems sort of like, it's kind of cool, like sort of like the whole, you know, Dallas and Detroit thing on Thanksgiving. I'm trying to start that in Phoenix. Phoenix seems like an odd thing. Like the thing that occurred to me is maybe they were trying to, time it with like the Fiesta Bowl. If ABC was showing the Fiesta Bowl on national TV, which I'm not sure if that would have been a big enough thing where it would have happened, but that just is sort of like, you know, that's in the Phoenix area, obviously, as well.
It
started in 71, so that actually, I think, is after this tradition starts. Maybe it isn't connected to that, but, I don't know. Just I couldn't. I looked into why they may have tried to do it in Phoenix, and I couldn't find anything. So
yeah, 68 and 69. It looks like was the first.
Yeah, the first Fiesta Bowl was 71. So.
You're right. Okay, the inaugural game was 1971. Yeah, so that's weird. Okay, so it wasn't that. I wonder what's Christmassy about Phoenix? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's nice. I mean, it's a nice place to spend Christmas. I'm sure it's warm.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, I would like to. You know, I'll go to Phoenix for Christmas, but if someone invites me, so if there's a Phoenix resident, what's a Phoenix resident like a Phoenixan or Phoenician?
Yeah. A Phoenician.
I believe Phoenician might be right.
Right.
Anyway, if you,
it's like Parisian when Paris, like you have to kind of
right.
Yeah, no, it'd probably be that. Yeah, I don't know. I will ask I know a few people from Phoenix.
Okay.
A, I will ask them if you can come over to their house for Christmas, and then B, I will ask what I should call them. So
all right, it's good.
So I'll tell them to get the guest bedroom ready because you're coming.
I'll be there. Yeah. So this is build is kind of a big matchup between Pete Maravich and Connie Hawkins. This is Maravich's rookie season, and Hawkins has been in the NBA for 2 years. He had 4 pro years total. And there's kind of a whole big thing with Connie Hawkins is that he was blackballed for professional basketball for about a half a decade after some gambling allegations that were unsubstantiated. That was what I was looking for. So, but anyway, eventually he made it to the ABA for a couple years, then came over to Phoenix. The Suns are 21-18, I guess, after the result of this game, and the Hawks are 12-24. So the Hawks are struggling despite having Maravich, who's sort of was a sensational college player, expected to transfer well to the NBA. They also had Lou Hudson, who was a six-time All-Star for the Hawks, was right in his prime. And then Walt Bellamy, who was one of the, Chamberlain and Russell and Kareem, was right, sort of the next tier big men. He was 30 or 31 at that point. So getting older, but still, effective anyway. The Suns weren't quite as star laden, but they did have they had Dick Van Arsdale. They had Neil Walk, who was number 2 drafted behind Kareem in the the Suns lost the coin flip, so they got Neil Walk instead of Kareem. So
which is a nice consolation prize, right?
I honestly don't know a whole lot about Neil Walk, but
let's see what Neil Walk's career win shares was. Let's see how it compares to old Kareem Abdul-Jabbar here.
Yeah.
He
had 30.3. Yeah, that's not terrible. Yeah, it's not as good as
there's
Kareem.
Worse ways to do it. Yeah, what, he had 5 years in Phoenix, 5 or 6 years? That's not bad.
Yeah, that's okay.
We've seen worse. Overall, doing this podcast, we've seen a lot worse top 3 overall picks. So
than Neil Walk, absolutely.
Yeah. So go Neil Walk. Paul Silas shows up, too. He's in pretty much every one of our podcasts some way.
Yeah, Paul Silas, yeah, he didn't.
He's everywhere.
He didn't really do, the footage that we see of the game is like about 30 minutes or so. Apparently, there's a full version available somewhere shown on TV or whatever, but it wasn't on YouTube. And it's mostly highlights from Maravich, a few from free from Connie Hawkins as well, though Hawkins doesn't really do anything in the first half because he picks up 3 fouls like in the first 2 minutes of the game.
Yeah, which the Phoenix crowd is really pissed about the fouls. I don't know how recently you watched it, but I watched it earlier today, and it's funny. So Hawkins picks up his, I think, 3rd in the first quarter or something like that, and then like someone else gets fouled, and the Phoenix fans are just booing like crazy. They're like, come on. Like they're a restless crowd here. They're really pissed off about these foul calls.
They were not happy. Yeah. And Cotton Fitzsimmons is the he's the Phoenix coach, but he would actually become the Hawks coach in a couple seasons after this. Mm-hmm. The Hawks had been coached by Richie Guerin, who was a star for them and also for the Knicks from the 50s into the 60s. And this is the 3rd year for the Hawks in Atlanta. So Keith Jackson, the famous college football announcer, is on commentary with Jack Twyman, who was a star for Cincinnati in the 60s, along with Oscar Robertson and Jerry Lucas. I don't know, the kind of the impressions that I had, the guy who really stood out for me was Lou Hudson.
Yeah, and he was the guy I was going to say that when you were seeing the clips, a lot of the highlights were, you know, Barevich, as you said, and Hawkins. But a lot of them, I mean, as a result of Hudson sort of taking it, yeah, Lou Hudson was a huge part of this game, and obviously good reason, you know, with 33 points. But yeah, I was very impressed by watching him play. He's one of the few guys, when I watch older games, I try to look at guys and sort of unfairly or you know, fairly, I try to look and see, you know, who could hang today, or who, if we plop them into today's NBA, would still do pretty well, even given their skills. Obviously, there's so many. I mean, it's a terrible argument that people make about, like, you know, well, if they got, you know, this sort of training here and this, you know, I don't like making it. It's kind of ridiculous. But he's a guy, one way or another, that I thought was really good and really stood out to me. Like, you see some guys in, like, big men of years past that kind of awkward or whatever. He seemed like a guy you could put in here right now, and he'd be probably okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the kind of the comparisons that were made, there's another APBR forum talking, you know, with some notes on the whole game by Gabe Farkas. And he kind of compared him to Paul Pierce or Jamal Mashburn.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I see a lot of Pierce in him. The head fakes, some little kind of one step, you know, those fadeaways that Pierce is wont to do, the ones where he doesn't really leave the ground. He just kind of like moves his body back a little bit, or he has, you know, very, a real good footwork is the one thing I noticed, yes, with Hudson. I mean, obviously we're seeing these little highlights here, but yeah, as far as I could tell, I mean, he was able to get himself open. He was able to get himself some space. It was very interesting to see how he did
it. Yeah, Twyman compared him to Cliff Hagen, who was a Hawk star when they were in St. Louis. I also kind of thought a little bit like Jamal Wilkes as well. Just like, I noticed, like, the smoothness stood out to me too. You know, even like a little bit smoother than Pierce. And Pierce has a great footwork, but just his motion isn't quite as smooth as Hudson's was. Like, he just sort of, like, it's almost like he kind of floated and glided, you know, at certain points. You know, he just really
And it especially stands out when you watch kind of 70s basketball, because a lot of it can be sort of awkward and the way the guys move. And I mean, now with our eyes, we notice such a fluid, like, you watch the Spurs and then you watch this and you're like, what is going on? Like, what are they doing? Like, where are you standing? Why are you doing that? But now, like, when you watch it in that context, it's a little bit different. But he stands out, you know, head and shoulders above the other guys in terms of, yeah, I think, like you're saying, the fluidity. I mean, Maravich does to an extent as well, but Hudson definitely stood out.
Yeah, Maravich was scrawnier than I, like, thought.
It was a little, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he's a rookie, so, you know, he might grow, you know, not that he was, like, ever, like, a burly guy, but I remember one thing that kind of stood out. I think I've mentioned before, but, like, an excerpt of Julius Erving, of his book, when he went to training camp with the Hawks. He was trying to play in the NBA for the Hawks, and then there were lawsuits and he had to go back to the ABA. But he, you know, he talked about, like, how, like, strong Maravich was and how he didn't really expect that, you know? And you know, just kind of Maravich just did seem like a little bit like a little bit of a scrawny guy. I mean, he's obviously quick. He's obviously skilled in passing. He's definitely an unrepentant gunner as well.
Oh, God, yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's one funny moment. I don't know if you caught it. He gets fouled, and he goes for a free throw, and the ref tosses him the ball, but Maravich doesn't look up, and it just hits him in the head.
Oh, I missed that.
But then it hits him in the head, and then it just lands in his hands, and he just kind of dribbles like nothing. like just played it as cool as Pete Maravich could possibly play getting hit in the, you know, the head with a ball. Nice. But, yeah, it's pretty fun. Like it's not really – I mean, they don't make a big deal out of it. It just kind of hits him in the side of the head, but I just thought that was kind of funny, and he just didn't care, just did his dribbles and shot the ball. One thing I always love about older games, too, the Nets are so – tiny. Mm-hmm. Like, compared to now, like, they have, like, they're like the Nets when you go to, like, a terrible park or whatever, like, you go to an elementary school, and they're not, like, they're very tight. I don't know how to describe it, but if you watch this, you'll see what I'm saying. They're just very small nets and small backboards, and it's just funny to watch.
Yeah, it's just the aesthetics are so different. And obviously it's so dark, too. Yeah, and the footage we watched was pretty grainy, so, you know, it's kind of hard to make some things out real clearly, but yeah, I don't know. Like, Maravich is a guy I want to look at more thoroughly, because I just have the feeling that, like, Maravich he's obviously, like, on the top 50 list of all time, and he's a legend in one respect, but, like, I don't think – I get the feeling, like, that he wasn't, like, really, like, a winning basketball player to a certain extent.
Right.
Like, what he did on the court, like, wasn't that helpful toward winning. And part of it is just sort of like how guys played at the time, you know, and so there's some of that, but I get the feeling that, like, if you sort of examined him, like, in more detail, you'd probably, like, run into, you know, some some problems, I guess, with.
Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. I think that that's long sort of been, or not long been, but recently, as of late, as people have sort of studied stuff, and I know in pretty decent detail, I think the Free Darko history book talks a little bit about that aspect, that, you know, he might have been a guy that was more of just kind of, we remember him now, and people remember him now for the highlight plays, but less so of like the defensive stops or, you know, great moments or great game, you know, great individualized games, more of, oh, he was, you know, maybe more generalizations of like, oh, you know, he was able to do this on the court and he was able to do that on the court, but less so of like specifics of, okay, you know, what was a great game or when was a great year? You know, it's kind of hard. And he's a very weird character. I would like to study him. We'll have to. I'm sure at some point we're going to do an episode about him.
Yeah,
he'd be very interested to do that and just see how. I'd like to see how at the time how he was sort of perceived, because I can imagine that being just a total culture shock. I mean, we see articles now where guys, you know, in the 90s or the 80s are even still like, you know, they don't win or they're too flashy or whatever. I can't imagine, you know, in the 70s what people were saying about Pete Maravich.
There's definitely some of that, some of the flashiness and some of the, like, he doesn't play defense, which is even mentioned during the broadcast. And, you know, so some of those faults were sort of seen at the time, but I think he was still considered a great offensive player. And really, like, I mean, he was a great offensive player because he took a lot of shots. I mean, he scored a lot of points because he took a lot of shots, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, not that he was bad. I mean, you know, he obviously did, I mean, he helped his team. But, like, I think in the pros, he made the playoffs three times, all in his first three seasons, and it was with a losing record twice. So, so it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, how good, you know, what was, I mean, I, you know, I don't want to like put, like, obviously, like, making the playoffs and winning titles is not like the only thing. I mean, you can only do so much with obviously who you have on your team, although, you know, there's a decent roster here. But I do think, like, if you're a truly great player, you have to get your team to, like, at least a certain point, at least like some playoff success, I think, is almost like necessary.
Yeah, and
unless you're dragging just like terrible teams, you know?
Yeah. And that's been my argument. We'll actually get to a guy later that we're going to talk about that I've sort of always had that argument with my friends or with other people about. And you can make sort of, there's arguments both ways about the possible terrible team thing, but like Tracy McGrady is always a guy that I would use that argument with, or at least had, is that, you know what, look, I understand his teams weren't great. I understand that, you know, he had, you know, extenuating circumstances or whatever. But great players can at least get, you know, a few rounds in the playoffs, at least have prolonged playoff success. And I don't know if Tracy McGrady ever had that in any way. And Pete Maravich never really necessarily had that either. But we'll get to that when we talk about Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
But and I don't know if this is the correct forum to have a huge discussion about that. But, no, it's definitely pretty interesting. I'm kind of curious. He's now that they have, you know, value over replacement player added to Basketball Reference, Pete Maravich is only 11. His value over replacement player. I don't know how good that is. I'm trying to look at how that compares to other Hall of Famers, because that'd be very curious. So let you do a Hall of Fame search on. Oh, there it is. Yes. Okay. Let's see how he compares to other Hall of Famers, real quick.
Yeah, I know.
It's exciting rating. It's thrilling rating. I know
he was like the lowest or near the lowest in win shares 48 of the guy who's were in the top.
Well, just
50.
To let you know, Michael Jordan had a value over replacement player of 11 in one of his years, because unfortunately I did single seasons as opposed to combined seasons. So,
oh yeah, there you go.
So unfortunately, Jordan in 1 year was a 11 value over replacement.
Yeah, well they apparently didn't track value over replacement until 70. They don't have numbers of it until 74, which is the first year they track turnover. So that does not include his first three seasons, but.
Okay. So that would change a little bit of the equation there a little bit. And obviously he didn't have as long as 10
years.
Assume
it's 20 or something along those lines, if, you know.
There are 46 guys with higher value over replacement in the Hall of Fame. So
that's
not awful,
that's actually not awful. No. So
yeah, I thought that was going to be a lot worse. That's not
maybe
bad.
So, you know, I mean, obviously there's different ways of looking at it, and the stats aren't going to tell you everything, particularly in the years which we don't really have complete stats. But I don't know. There's more to be had there, but that's obviously for another time.
Riley.
But
why did that bum ever go to the Hall of Fame?
Obviously,
there's probably other reasons why he's in the Hall of Fame. Not that I can think of, but yeah, he's got a negative 2.9 value over replacement. So that's a very egregious mistake by the NBA or the Basketball Hall of Fame. So.
Right, exactly. So
what did that guy?
Maravich has he does have, like, I mean, there's some highlights, clearly some passing and some scoring stuff. Is really cool behind the pack underhanded pass to Bellamy heading to the basket for a layup, but I think a little bit before that he just completely loses Dick Van Arsdale on like a backdoor cut, like, you know, and that sort of shows the inattention to defense. And Van Arsdale, we don't really see the highlights because they're not shown, but Van Arsdale had a really good game here. just, you know, he had, I think he was the leading scorer for the, in the Suns in this game. He had 32 points, did a lot of good screen setting and a lot of good, you know, got a lot of timely rebounds and scored real well. So, you know, he was a nice player in his day. So sort of, I mean, the Suns are up for pretty much, you know, they have a pretty comfortable lead for most of this game. The Hawks do kind of make a comeback to tie late in the third quarter, but then Hawkins heats up in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, and the Suns, you know, get back to a comfortable lead. And you could see that Hawkins, like, he reminded me, like, just body type of Dr. J with, like, the long arms and the big hands.
Yeah.
It was just able to, like, reach for offensive rebounds higher than anybody else or get the ball up high for layups past, you know, defenders who are trying to block his shot. You know, we didn't see a whole lot, even though he did end up with, you know, 20 points or so, you know, all in the second half and most of them, I believe, in the fourth quarter. So, you know, he was able to do that. So the Suns end up winning 127-115. And funny thing is the Suns would actually finish 48-34 that year. They were in the West and they would miss the playoffs. The Hawks were still in the East. They would go West later in the decade and then go back in the East in the early 80s. But they finished 36-46, but they actually made the playoffs and they lost to the Knicks in the first round. And they actually made the playoffs over a 44-38 Celtics team in their same conference because they took two teams from each division. This was I think this was actually the first year in which they went from they had four divisions instead of two divisions. This is the first year for conference play. So it's either the first or second. I think it's the second year for conference play.
Yeah. So that's did not work.
That did not last that much longer. Like I 74, they switched it so it was just conference record, and right. If you won your division, you would get it. But it wasn't. You didn't take two from each division. You took, you know, the top three or the top four, but you had to include the division winner. So you could still finish with a worse record than somebody, I guess, in the other division. But you would, right. At least if you won your division, you know, that at least makes a little bit more sense.
Mm-hmm. And thankfully, that issue has been resolved, and there's never ever an issue of who's going to make the playoffs or anything like that anymore. So I'm glad they all tied that up in the in the early 70s. We'll never have another argument about conferences or divisions or anything like that, which is great. I love just knowing that everyone's a playoff team and they deserve to go in, and we're done. Good.
East-West imbalance is not a problem at all.
Right. It's so good. It's so nice not to have these issues that we have, you know, we used to have then. So
right. So
it's like how tanking, you know. Just started 5 years ago. Never happened before.
It's never been a problem before until now.
Yeah.
So,
despite every pretty much every episode we've had, at some point you see like an article about a team just intentionally being awful, or you know, to get a good draft.
Yeah.
But yeah, no,
exactly.
Definitely.
Exactly. So next we have the Bulls versus Celtics in Christmas 1990.
Pistons.
I'm sorry. Did I say Celtics?
Yes, yeah, that's all right.
No, the Pistons.
It's not
incorrect.
Right. We should say before we go on of how we picked these games. Essentially, what we did is we sort of had a list, or we basically scoured YouTube to try to figure out everything that we had highlights of. I mean, when we first had this idea, we thought, okay, let's try every Christmas game we can possibly do, and then it's like, oh wait, there's only highlight videos, very few full games. We were hoping NBA League Pass would have a decent amount. They didn't have too much, so we essentially had to go, okay, here's what we have clips of. And then you picked two, I picked two, and then we had a fan vote for the last one. And we'll kind of get to which one won the fan vote, but these are your two picks, correct?
They are, yes.
Okay, so yeah, just to clarify, yeah, the Bulls, Pistons, and the Hawks Suns. Yeah, I don't know what the hell got caught in my throat. The Hawks Suns, those were our those were your two picks, and I have the two picks coming up here, and then we had the one fan vote. But that's sort of how we got to it, and we despite our lie at the beginning, we did not watch every Christmas game ever.
We didn't.
So I apologize. I didn't.
I did.
Dear God, I apologize.
Yes,
sir.
Yes. I haven't slept in 6 days, but right. You know, everything's fine.
I had to watch the. Feel bad at those Knicks, like 1990s, like late 90s Knicks games that you had, unfortunately.
It was not a good time. Not a good time for me.
Charles Smith scoring 10 points and being the second highest scorer.
So this is, of course, in the midst of a big Bulls-Pistons rivalry, which the Pistons had had the better of up until this point. I believe they'd been in the playoffs three straight seasons, and the Pistons had dispatched the Bulls each time, although the Bulls had gradually done better in those postseason series. But the Pistons still, they had won 28 out of the last 37 games, and also 15-3 of the past regular season games. So the Pistons still mostly had the Bulls' number. Both had good records. They're very close in the standings. Well, they were 18-9 and 16-11. Detroit was 16-11, so Detroit was a little bit back. They had actually played just a few days earlier, on December 20th, 1990, and the Pistons smashed them pretty good. Phil Jackson even kind of suggested that, like, oh, okay, we might need to make some changes here because, you know, we're just not measuring up to the Pistons, and we'll see, you know, what. I mean, the quote is, and then if we can't produce a game against this club, we'll have to think about what we're doing with our personnel and what we're doing with our team. So, you know, it's sort of interesting that they're at least, that's at least the talk that he's having, whether they're thinking of that or not, or whether they really feel like, okay, if they're having questions at this point of, okay, can we actually make it past these guys?
Right, yeah, and that was obviously a huge concern in Chicago. I mean, the narrative now, we just sort of assume, you know, they beat them, and then they were great, and Jordan never failed, and this sort of stuff. But I mean, this was the big theme was, yeah, it was the, and interestingly enough, it was the tough guy Pistons versus kind of the weak minded Bulls, which is unbelievable now when you think of, you know, what you know, the entire narrative surrounding Michael Jordan is that he's just this he wins at all costs and all this sort of stuff. And Scott, you know, we know Scottie Pippen is, you know, top 50 player of all time, but yeah, he, and in the articles, you know, you can listen to this, our Scottie Pippen podcast about that too. People were really questioning him as sort of that next guy with Jordan. It was obviously Jordan. Everybody knew he was the man and just a great player, but not so much about Scottie Pippen. Everybody was sort of concerned about, is he the right guy to, you know, to take them to this next level? And also the supporting cast, which, you know, on its face isn't great. I mean, obviously when they win three in a row and the defense goes to another level and Horace Grant, you know, breaks out and all that sort of stuff, it seems now easy to say, yeah, what a great team it was. But at this time, without any success, it was kind of a question. It was Jordan and a bunch of kind of stiffs at that point.
Yeah. So the Pistons actually lost 7 of 8 games before the win against the Bulls. So they're getting older. Lambeer is 33. Vinnie Johnson's 34. Mark McGuire's 31. Thomas is 29. He actually only played 48 games that year, presuming injury. And so, you know, there's just some signs like, okay, it's, you know, Robin's 29, although obviously he'd play for a long time afterward. Dumars is the, you know, the youngest major player at 27. Sally's 26. So they're the younger guys, but, you know, obviously most of the key players are, you know, 30 and older. So, you know, in retrospect, it was kind of become, it had to be clear that it was, you know, not going to be their time forever.
Right.
So the Bulls end up winning this game. The YouTube clip that we had is basically all Michael Jordan highlights, which on one hand is great because it's Michael Jordan and it's always fun to watch him be awesome. But it's a little disappointing because we were I think we want to see more of the game and kind of more of like how it went,
right.
You know.
And that's an issue, unfortunately, with a lot of YouTube videos that we look up. A lot of them, especially through all this, is a lot of it is, and we're going to get to games later, where if Kobe Bryant's involved, chances are there's only going to be a YouTube video of Kobe Bryant highlights and all of his shots and all of his steals and rebounds or whatever, and not the entire game. It's so hard to find just full-out game highlight videos. And I understand it's Jordan, it's Kobe, it's that sort of stuff. A lot of people just want to watch those guys, but us nerds, we want to watch the whole damn thing. I want to see Horace Grant setting some screens. Come
on. Like, exactly.
Like, come on, people. Like,
and
I want an elbow jumper. I want elbow jumpers from Bill Cartwright. Is that so much to ask?
According to the AP version of the story, Grant actually lost his starting role to Stacey King at this point. I think that was very short-lived, but
That must have been just Jordan pissed off about something.
Yeah, or Phil just playing fun mind games or whatever.
Yeah, because obviously Horace Grant is a this is shocking, a better player than Stacey King, but yeah, sometimes that happens because, you know, that, which is particularly interesting because Stacey King, if you read the Jordan rules, is like Jordan's like whipping boy. Like that, he just cannot, like, that's his favorite thing in practice to do is just call out Stacey King for how horrible
he's
he is.
He's kind of the Mario Chalmers.
And sometimes actually punch him. So yeah. Occasionally knock him out because, you know.
Hey. Yeah, why not? Before there's a New York Times feature on Bill Cartwright, of course, who had played for the Knicks and was kind of a disappointment there, was criticized for bad defense and bad rebounding, and apparently was nicknamed Invisibil. Just fun, but they talk about, well, now he's good and he's part of the Bulls surge and he's been healthy for, you know, he's actually been healthy for the first time in years and so forth. The main thing about the highlights, I guess, this is the first year for the NBA and NBC. So we have Marv Albert and Mike Fratello on commentary. Phil Jackson's wearing his fanciest bow tie, it appears.
Oh, great bow tie.
Yeah. And I mean, Jordan obviously does a lot of awesome things. He has a great up and under in traffic for a layup. Splits the double team, like just shoots through it like with the Cartwright screen and just like smoothly like stops and nails a 15-footer. How fast he accelerates and then how he is able to stop and just do that all in the smoothest motion possible is pretty amazing.
It's unbelievable. There's another split double team where he just goes around his back. Like there's a double team and he just drives in between them, goes around his back, like tosses the ball behind his back, and then just does like a layup in traffic. And just like,
yeah,
just it's like it. I can't imagine trying to guard him because it's like there's guys in the way, there's people put, and he just like find, like he doesn't get hit on these. Like I'm talking about this play, and he probably all five guys probably are focused on him at in this particular play that I'm talking about, and nobody even goes as near as touching him, and it goes in. Like, you know, like he splits a double team, neither of the guys touch him, and he goes up for a layup in traffic, and he just like it's just like he was floating in it. Like it's unbelievable to watch, you know, the highlights of him. It's just especially, and you know, the Pistons are no slouch defensively. Obviously, we know that, but it's incredible to watch him at work. And yeah, this game in particular was classic great Jordan work.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also a really cool fadeaway from like the baseline, like almost, you know, behind the basket, like that was just like, yeah, you know, he was pretty great. Michael Jordan, pretty good at basketball. And his second son had been born 32 hours before the tip off. So he
Marcus.
Celebrating his celebrating a new boy. And Joe Dumars apparently threw an elbow into Horace Grant's stomach. Grant retaliated by throwing a right hand to his midsection and in full view of the officials. And he was ejected from the game. Apparently, they sort of like apologized right afterwards. So there was not much heat between the two of them. I guess Dumars is the only guy who, on the Pistons who is not so hateable. So he managed to managed to get away from that. And all right, anything more? Anything else stand out to you about the game in particular?
Not really. I mean, obviously, it's great to hear Marv Albert. You know, classic Marv Albert, classic NBA and NBC. And sure. Yeah, there's not a whole lot else that kind of stands out with this one. It's you know, it's interesting to know that the Bulls had lost you know a few days prior because they looked great. I mean, they looked like they were easily better than the Pistons. So it's kind of funny to see. Maybe it's that getting Horace Grant out of there and getting the influx of Stacey King really helped them. But no, it's pretty interesting because it doesn't look at any point. I mean, at least through the highlights we're watching, which unfortunately is just Michael Jordan, but sort of looking at the box score and stuff too, it seems like this is the Bulls and they just ran away with this thing. So it's kind of interesting to see that, you know, a few days prior, but you know, this is life in the NBA. And it was funny to see classic Rodman as well. There's a few highlights of him and then you look at the box score. He had 1 point and 10 rebounds because that is Rodman. Yeah. So that's it's just great how he fit in with that whole team. But yeah,
Grant, he played 78 games and started 76. So the Stacey King starting did not last too long.
Yeah. Well, and in this game in particular, he gets more minutes than Stacey King. So I won. I mean, he gets one more minute, but yeah, right. I mean, that the whole you're benched is, yeah, that, so that leads me to believe it's probably something like that. And obviously he does quite well off the bench, Horace Grant. So yeah, it was an interesting game nonetheless. But yeah, I really do wish we could get a full highlight of this. But either way, still a decent amount of fun.
Yeah, yeah, and of course this would lead. They would meet in the conference finals, where the Bulls would sweep the Pistons. After the Pistons had beaten the Hawks and the Celtics. So and of course that's one of the defining moments of the changing of the guard from the Pistons to the Bulls and the leading to the Bulls dynasty of the 1990s.
Yep. All thanks to Stacey King.
All thanks to Stacey King. That's right.
This game was the momentum that they needed to go to the rest of the way. I think we can unequivocally say that.
We absolutely can say there's absolutely no, you know, we're not going to let facts get in the way of a good narrative.
Right. So, Stacey King, you are the reason the Bulls won. I'm going to go 6 championships because, you know, that got Jordan thinking about winning. And, yeah, so I can easily say that Stacey King is the reason they won 6 times.
I think that's fair. So next is one of your choices, Rich.
Yeah, so I picked the Orlando Magic versus the Detroit Pistons, 2002. And the reason I picked this game is because I remember it vividly because – and I'm not sure. We didn't get a chance to kind of talk about this, but maybe this is a good time to do it. What sort of your memories of watching the NBA on Christmas before I kind of get into mine, because that kind of segues into why I picked this game?
Sure. Well, honestly, probably my favorite Christmas as a grown-up was 1 year where I was incredibly sick, and the only thing that, and we were visiting family, and the only thing that I had the strength to do was to sit on a couch away from other people who were doing Christmas things and watch 4 NBA games in 1 day.
Nice.
That is my favorite.
that's a great Christmas memory.
I don't even remember exactly what year it would have. It would have been late in the 2000s, I guess. But yes, that would be my. It might have been Odin's first year. Might have been 07.
Okay. Yeah. That sounds okay.
Yeah. So. But anyway, the point being is that
my favorite Christmas memory is not being with people watching basketball.
Yes, with right,
which will segue into mine, I think, pretty nicely. Yeah. But no, so the thing that I always remember about, you know, the Christmas Day games is sort of in my family, our Christmas tradition is on, you know, Christmas Eve, we'll go to my dad's side of the family, which is a lot of fun. There's a lot of people that are my age. You know, we play games. It's a very jovial event. It's very fun. You know, we open gifts on that day as well. That's my favorite day of the year. I mean, I love that day. I look forward to that day no matter what. And we don't watch TV. There's always something to do. You know, occasionally if it's nice out, we'll go play basketball, but living in Chicago, it's not, except for this year. It might be, but you know, we'll do kind of stuff like that. It's just a good old time. And then what we used to do is on Christmas Day, we'd open presents, you know, I'd do that. And then we'd go to my grandma's or my aunt's house on my mom's side or whatever. And that was not fun. That was absolutely dreadful because the only cousins I liked, they didn't show up. Pretty much there was nobody there for me to ever talk to. Like, I was the youngest person there by probably about 25 years, pretty much at any given time. Like, there was occasionally a cousin or two would stop by or do whatever, but for the most part, I didn't really get along with them as much as I did. So essentially, those days, like, when I discovered that there was basketball and it played all day, like, that was like, thank God I can finally do something. Because, you know, during the Bulls, you know, that was still a big thing. You know, when the Bulls were a big deal and they were playing on Christmas, all the old guys there, you know, all the grandpas or whatever would go after they eat, and they would go into this other room. It was this horribly dark, dingy basement. It was like the most depressing place ever, which is a great thing for Christmas, is just to be depressed and dark. So we'd go down there and there'd just be these old guys, and they would watch the Bulls or whatever. They'd all fall asleep by about the second quarter or whatever, because they're all, you know, either liquored up or had enough turkey or whatever. So they'd all fall asleep. So it was basically just me watching the rest of these games by myself, hearing snores. Slowly but sure, they all kind of started dying off or whatever, or just, you know, for whatever reason, they would stop coming or yeah. I mean, we had a lot of them. I mean, my grandpa died and a bunch of the other, you know, older uncles or whatever passed on or whatever. And then I still just kind of kept it alive because I would go there. My mom would talk to her sisters and my grandma. And there was like, me and my dad were like the only two males of like any sort of age that were there. So we would kind of go in this dark, dingy room and I'd turn on the NBA and I would say, yeah, this is pretty cool. Like that was the only thing that got me through that day. It was like, oh, we've got to go to this stupid basement. But I was like, you know what? Basketball be on all day. And in particular, I remember this game because I remember this was one that I Which is an awful, awful day. I think, like, one of the other families that I enjoyed wasn't going to come. So I was like, dear God, it's going to be, like, my mom, my grandma, and my aunts that I hate, and, like, my dad. And that's it. My dad fell asleep, and I was like, God, I have nothing to do. You know, like, I literally have nothing to do here. Like, it's, like, the most unfun place ever. There's no good food. There's no sweets. There's, like, nothing for me to do. And I remember turning on this game and just being blown away by how much I enjoyed this game. And this – you know, this is around the time when I became just a gigantic NBA fan. And I think this game is a big part of that, because I remember just being glued to the TV watching Tracy McGrady. And the game I picked was, if you didn't get to that, the Orlando Magic versus the Detroit Pistons from 2002, which just a fascinating game in a lot of ways. You had an interesting note in our kind of show notes here, is that I thought about it as well, is that when you watch these games of the early 2000s, the baggy shorts and the loose-fitting jerseys and just the fashion of the early 2000s looks so weird. You know, it looks so outdated now.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see it. Like we always make the joke, and you mentioned that too. We make the joke about the short shorts in the 80s and, like, the afros in the 70s or whatever. Go back and watch a 2002 game. Like, you – don't just as ridiculous, because you're like, why are you wearing such horrible clothes? why are your shorts, like, all the way to your ankles? Like, why are you wearing, like, terrible, like, Rock-A-Wear, like, jumpsuits or whatever? Like, the fashion's so awful. It's so bad.
Yeah. It is funny. I mean, it doesn't seem like that long ago, although obviously it kind of is. 12 years is a decent amount of time. Obviously things change in that way, but yeah, I just, this, the way the jerseys look on people and the way that, yeah, like the way the McGrady's jersey's hanging off of him, you know, as he's putting on this great performance, is just sort of like, you know, there's nothing classic feeling about that part of it anyway.
No, not at all. And like, yeah, you really just understand. I mean, when you, I think we sort of assumed that, like, post short shorts, everything was just kind of the same, and like now they're dressed the same. But I mean, the jerseys look way different now or then than they do now. I mean, we're going to a more loose, you know, a tighter jersey, like crazy. You know, obviously you have the jersey shirts, which are a whole different level. But yeah, it's you'd be surprised if you watched this, just how weird the fashion and the uniforms especially look. You know, in the early 2000s, you would just assume no more short shorts. Okay, it's all the same, but no, it's not. So, it's also an ESPN game, so you have Mike Tirico and Greg Anthony. What do you think of that combo? I really enjoy it. I forgot how much I enjoyed Greg Anthony.
Yeah, Greg Anthony's pretty good. I've always liked him too. You know, not that he's like standout, but he's definitely solid. You know, he's definitely a solid, you know, second or third tier announced team. You know, and Tirico's fine. You know, Tirico does a pretty solid job. He's not as classic as Marv Albert, but you know.
No, I enjoy Tirico, but yeah, there's. He's sort of just kind of there. Like, I don't think I actively dislike him. Like, there's some NBA commentators I actively dislike. He's just there for the most part. I don't really care one way or another. But I think he does a good job. He reminds me of Christmas in a lot of ways, of the 2000s Christmas, because he always does those games. But, yeah, this is an interesting game for a lot of reasons. You obviously have Grant Hill on the Orlando Magic. This was the second time he had played Detroit since signing with the Magic. And obviously, so many issues with him signing with the Magic. I mean, he played four games that year, or, you know, he played four more games in this prior year, you know, in this year. The prior year, I think, was 14 games or something like that. I mean, this was in the midst of his just complete breakdown, where you really just assumed that this was just the guy. And I know the narrative at the time was just like, man, that, you know, here's a guy with all the talent in the world. He can be the next, you know, NBA star. And there's just, I mean, people were doubting that he would ever be able to play again, or that, I mean, because it was just year after year after year, this ankle just would not heal, and like his entire tenure in Orlando was just a total train wreck for that point. But interestingly enough, he ended up having a pretty solid career, you know, which was shocking, because at this time, and you read the articles too, it's just like you just assume that it's like over, like this guy, like, you know, like a Greg Oden type, where it's like, okay, the guy can't stay healthy, so just forget it, like it's over. But or like Andrew Bynum, it might be an apt comparison as well. But no, he carved out a pretty nice career for him. Interestingly enough, McGrady was also not supposed to play in this game. He had an injured back at the hands of a Kobe Bryant elbow on December 15th, which did we ever find out if it was inadvertent or
I didn't. Kobe? I don't know.
I'm sure it wasn't, like, he shoved him, but I was like, I always be curious to see what happened. But either way, Kobe somehow, someway elbowed Tracy McGrady in the back, and it was led to believe that Tracy was not going to play in this game, but he did, and needless to say, he played pretty well. He had 46 points on 14 of 26 shots, 6 rebounds, and 3 steals. So a pretty decent game, I'd say, for Mr. McGrady. Mike Miller had a good game. He scored 15 points for Orlando. Grant Hill played in this game, but struggled a lot. He shot 3 for 17. He only had 10 points, but had 15 rebounds to get another double-double. And as we said, he would only play 4 more games in this year.
I wonder how many of his own shots he rebounded. Right. I mean, he had 14 chances at least. So
yeah, I mean, that's not a bad – yeah, that's not a bad thought. Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, in the highlights, you couldn't see that too much because a lot of these highlight videos were Tracy McGrady. And not, needless to say, that's probably a decent idea. We don't need Mike Miller highlights or whatever. But Detroit, this is a little bit of an interesting Detroit team. It's still kind of a team in flux. I mean, it'd be 2 years until they'd won the championship, but another year until they become really good. Like, at this point, they're still okay. You know what I mean? But they're not really that.
Actually, they won it the next season. Didn't they? They won, this is the 2003 season, so they won in the 2004 season.
Oh, was it the 02? Oh, no, okay. All right. Never mind. It is the 02-03.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. So they would. Oh, they win with it the next
year. Yeah.
Okay.
So they had, I mean, they had Bill Upps and they had.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're
Ben
right.
Wallace,
you're right.
And they had Rip Hamilton. And then they would. Tayshaun Prince didn't play in this game, but he was on the team as a rookie. He actually, by the end of the season, he actually had a big role with the team. Like, mm-hmm. he played a whole. It's weird because he started playing, you know, major minutes with less than 10 games left in the season, and then throughout the playoffs, he played. Right. Yeah. They would end up firing Rick Carlisle and getting Larry Brown the next year, and then making the Rashid trade in the middle of the midseason. So, I mean, they were still definitely kind of transitioning into that, you know, into that championship team. Mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't seem particularly close to it. I mean, they seemed like a good team, but they didn't, you know, you wouldn't look at this team and think like, oh yeah, they're gonna win the title pretty soon. I mean, even when the East was kind of, even though the East again historically weak at this point, but yeah, it's funny because these teams would, of course, you know, kind of end up playing each other in the first round of the playoffs this year. The Pistons were the number one seed at 50-32, which kind of shows, again, is a good example of how weak the East was. The Magic were 42-40. And, you know, I know we'll talk about this. I'm sure we're going to get into this, but I do have to say that, like, you know, Tracy McGrady is taking a team that their second best player basically was Mike Miller, who was traded midway through the season for Drew Gooden.
Gordon Giracek and Drew Gooden. Yeah.
And, you know, like 34-year-old Daryl Armstrong. Pat Garrity played the second most minutes of the team. You know, Jacques Vaughn, who was kind of iffy, you know, really fat Sean Kemp in his last year. I mean, they basically had nobody, you know. So for him to take that team to 42-40 is pretty impressive.
No, I agree. Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about McGrady in general. I this year is definitely not the one that I would ever use an example of Tracy not being, you know, sort of a leader or a great, you know, a great performer, a great team performer, whatever. I mean, this one was a masterful because he had. I mean, this is the year where if people want to say, you know, we had bad teams. Yeah, I this team was awful. This team was not good at all. It'd be a few years prior in a lot of his Houston teams where I'd sort of have the argument to an extent. But yeah, this team was there was no question that this was just an awful team, and he had one of the great all-time years, and there's a great article by Scott Leedy on Hardwood Paroxysm, you could look it up, it's called The Lost Season Tracy McGrady, that just goes into detail about, you know, what he was able to accomplish this year, and just how good he, I mean, this is without a doubt, I mean, this is a top 15 season maybe of all time, like just unbelievable, you know, averages 32 points a game, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, shoots almost above 45% from the field, you know, nearly 80% from the free throw line, you know, 38% from behind the arc, true shooting percentage of 56.2. It's just an unbelievable year. And as you said, to take a team where with Pat Garrity and like Mike Miller to 42 wins and have them, and one of the things that they talk about in the article, and it's one of the defining moments of Tracy McGrady, is this team almost pulled off of a huge upset. It almost beat the number one seeded Detroit Pistons in the first round. Famously, Tracy McGrady said, you know, it finally feels good to get in the second round. And then, oh boy, it unfortunately came crashing down. And then the Pistons came back and won the series despite being, you know, down 3-1. And that sort of always kind of defined McGrady. And then obviously the next year in Orlando would be a total train wreck. You know, Doc Rivers would be fired, you know, 11 or so games into the season. The next year, Tracy would be moved to, you know, Houston or whatever. And it was really kind of the end of that Orlando team. A lot of it was that playoff series and then the next subsequent year, which was just a total mess. But yeah, interesting at this point, you know, the Pistons are 18-9, so they're a good team, even though they don't look like it, and the Magic are 16-14. But yeah, the story of this game, I mean, especially when you watch the highlights, is just Tracy McGrady doing whatever he wants on the court, just being unbelievable.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I thought I wondered if the McGrady for Steve Francis trade was sort of the Michael Ray Richardson for Bernard King of our generation.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, it was, and you don't see those too often anymore. I like these sort of challenge trades where it's like, all right, here's my disappointing guy, here's your disappointing guy. Like,
yeah,
let's see if anything changes or whatever.
But McGrady was like, you know, a superstar swingman, and Francis was merely like a good guard who had a talent but also had major flaws.
Right, and one of the big issues, I don't know, you know how much you looked it up, but Tracy at that point had sort of, after that last year, you know, this year everything was kind of okay or whatever. That next year where they just completely melted down, there was a lot of issues with McGrady and management and McGrady and coaches or whatever. So a lot of it was they kind of, because they did not get the best of that deal, let's be honest. I mean, even at the time I remember, and I wasn't the biggest McGrady fan, but even at the time I was like, Steve Francis, this isn't like a great, because I mean, you kind of knew what the ceiling was with Steve Francis, and you weren't necessarily sure what the ceiling was with Tracy McGrady if, you know, if you could put him with a good team, if he could be a little bit more committed to practicing and defense and that sort of stuff and team ball or whatever, what he could have done as well. But no, it was always sort of, even at the time, I remember it being sort of like, Tracy or Steve Francis, I don't know if that's really, you know, the best move. But what worked out, though, is that next year, you know, when Orlando was so bad, is they got the number one overall pick and it turned into Dwight Howard. Yeah. So it kind of kickstarted their next sort of generation there. And Orlando's good about that, of sort of backing into a really, really good big man and a good pick and a good little sort of run for a few. I mean, they've obviously had some struggles, you know, as of late. But, yeah, it's interesting to see where the franchise went. I just find it always sort of fascinating that the McGrady thing ended so quickly. Like, they had, you know, it's surprising that they didn't sort of hang with him a little bit and that it was that sort of next year that he was gone. Yeah. Like, because at this time, like, he's the god of Orlando. You know what I mean? Like, it's unfathomable that they would ship him out, you know, a year later. So,
you know, I believe if the Hawks had lost one more game, they would have gotten the number one pick for that year and been able to draft Dwight Howard. But then we would have missed out on the great 2004-2005 Hawks. They would have been too good. They would have had Dwight Howard. They probably would have won like 20 games and or you know 20.
Who did they
games.
Get in that draft?
They got Josh Smith and Josh Childress. Childress was picked at 6.
Oh, okay. Well, that's that draft. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
That was the
didn't work out quite as well.
That's not a very good draft. Have you ever looked at that draft?
It's been a while since I looked at it.
So, so you have Dwight Howard.
I mean,
you have
Luol Deng. You have trying to think of who else there is in that draft.
Yeah, a lot of them are. I mean, you have Dwight Howard, Emeka Okafor, Ben Gordon, Sean Livingston. I mean, Sean Livingston, obviously the injury was a big part. He was well on his way to having a pretty good. It's basically the role player draft. You have Devin Harris, Josh Childress, Luol Deng. Sorry, Toronto Raptors fans, you can just turn this off now if you want. Rafael Arruyo.
That's right. He was
all right, Raptors fans, you can come back. Andre Iguodala.
Yeah.
Cleveland Cavaliers fans, you can take a quick break here because you drafted Luke Jackson. So
he only played 73 games in the league. Arruyo played twice that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's unbelievable that he played. Andres Biedrich. So you got, unfortunately, Supersonics, you've got Robert Swift here.
This is actually
I'm going to put this in the bad draft. Sebastian Telfair, Chris Humphries, Al Jefferson, Kirk Snyder, Josh Smith, J.R. Smith. Yeah, Darrell Wright, Jameer Nelson, my guy, the 7'9" Russian, Pavel Pazdok, Victor Kriapa. Oh my God, a run on Slovenian and the Russians.
Yeah. Oh, Delonte. And Tony Delonte Allen, was. Kevin Martin.
Yeah, the role player.
Nice little things.
Anderson Varejao comes in.
Number 30.
The Minnesota Timberwolves continue to violate forfeit picks because of
Joe Smith. I forgot about that.
This is like their 10-year punishment for signing Joe Smith.
Sasha Vujicic at 27.
Yeah, Chris Duhon. Okay. Trevor Ariza.
Yeah.
Trevor Ariza comes up. Pape Sau.
Dante Smith, you know, Atlanta Hawks. Yeah. Royal Ivy, the three picks apart.
Yeah. Royal Ivy. Okay. All right.
Duhon, you know, Trevor Ariza, 43.
I mean, low on superstars, but decent on role players.
Yeah, I'm okay with this draft. I bet there are, you know, I think we have a draft show in us. So I you know, we'll have to kind of determine where
this draft
kind of fits in the mix of those drafts. Because I mean, definitely
2002. Okay, I think the easy answer for me is 2002.
The 2000 draft's really bad.
Oh, that, yeah, you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
That one's probably, because this one is 2002. Yao Ming, Jay Williams, Mike Dunleavy, Drew Gooden, Denver Nuggets fans, you could turn this off. You have Skeetishvili.
Yeah, DeJuan Wagner.
DeJuan Wagner, yeah, Nene Hilario, Chris Wilcox, Amari Stoudemire, Caron Butler. Yeah. Matt Barnes comes in later.
Yeah. Boozer's in there. Yeah, we're in. Was Boozer second round? Yeah, he was
way second
round. Right, 34. Yeah, because
that was when Duke guys were like, "Boo, hiss!" Like they're all bad. Remember that was going on for a while.
Yeah.
2000 is Kenyon Martin and then Stromile Swift, Darius Miles, Marcus Fizer, Mike. Oh, okay. Yeah,
I think 2000 would be my guess, but you know they're.
Yeah, Jamal McGlure is one of the best players here. So
right.
That doesn't. Michael Redd kind of.
Oh yeah, he was
in there.
He was
so
second round,
bad.
Right?
Yeah. Wow. Oof. Yeah, when Deshaun Stevenson is pretty much one of your top five guys in this draft class, it's probably
that's,
not.
That's not.
Yeah, that's a dumpster fire. Okay, let's never talk about that ever again.
Yeah.
So
there,
until we do our draft,
eight,
and then
eight,
let us talk.
There
about,
are eight
yeah.
players with over 0.1 win shares for 48. So.
Oh, boy.
All right.
that's not
that was true. A fun diversion.
Yes, I'm glad. That was our little mini day.
Yeah. So
we had none planned.
Should we take a little break?
Yeah, let's do a quick break, and then we'll finish up with our last two here.
Okay. All right, we are back. And we are going to talk about the winner of our listener poll was the Miami Heat versus Los Angeles Lakers in 2004. The first game between Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant after their breakup in Los Angeles. The Lakers, after winning three championships and losing in their fourth attempt to the Pistons, decided to trade Shaq. They, I don't know if they fired Phil Jackson, but let Phil Jackson go, and then re-signed Kobe Bryant, and it was now Kobe's team.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a very much of a changing of the guard, and that was if you don't remember that prior year was the Gary Payton, Karl Malone, like you know
yes.
that sort of Lakers team. So that was all out, and it was volatile at that point. Everybody sort of knew once it was over, if they didn't win a championship, a lot of this wasn't going to be like it was before. So
yeah, everyone had kind of grown to hate each other. So
yeah, that's the nice way of putting
it. But
so,
Phil at least will be back soon, and So the Heat are playing very well at this point. They're 22-7. They've won 10 straight in a row. The Lakers are 14-12. So they're struggling a bit. They got Lamar Odom and Brian Grant and Caron Butler in the Shaq trade. So you know that's not a bad haul. Butler didn't play in this game. He was hurt, so or presumably was hurt. He didn't play, so you know. And it's basically, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Describe like the pregame hype.
Yeah. So obviously, the narrative surrounding this was, and if I don't know if you were you because you were sort of out of the game at this point. Were you?
This was big enough that like I was paying. I probably
okay. This is like a pop culture
thing. I mean, this was
thing.
Huge.
Like this
was.
Yeah.
This is. I believe this is like the biggest regular season NBA game in like you know more than a decade.
Right. Yeah. This was a pop culture thing because it was this sort of it was a sexy story that like you know sports fans you know wanted to see it, but then also other people just the idea that these two you know star players hated each other and what's going to happen when they finally meet or whatever. So the narrative around this was totally just you know how were they going to. You know, how are they going to interact with each other? How would, you know, Shaq be perceived? You know, how would, you know, would they shake hands? Would they hug? Would they look each other in the face? Would they start fighting, you know, in the middle, you know, during the game, would they fight? So it was very interesting how that was going to sort of play out and what was going to happen there. It was cordial for the most part. They did sort of a bro hug, is the easiest way I could say it before the game, but it was not. It was like the coldest bro hug ever. I mean, it was Shaq was looking up, Kobe was looking at the ground, and it couldn't have lasted more than like 0.2 seconds where they sort of, you know, gave a quick little hug to each other, and that was it. It was over. But before the game, though, it was pretty interesting, and I remember that being sort of an issue as well, is how is LA going to react to Shaq? I mean, this is obviously a player that was instrumental in bringing them three championships. You know, how was he going to be, you know, welcomed in? He was welcomed with open arms. I mean, they played a highlight video before. Everybody was cheering for him, and it seemed to lighten the mood a little bit for him, at least. And I wonder if that sort of helped lessen the tension that was there between Kobe and Shaq, because it's pretty obvious from this pregame hug that there's not a lot of love lost. It's not like they hate each other, but they're not the best of friends. They don't really want to have Shaq didn't pull him aside and they had a little chit chat before the game and reminisced about times past. It was sort of, okay, you know, you're on this team, I'm on this team. All right, let's go. Pretty interesting enough, Shaq blocked Kobe's first shot attempt. So that was kind of interesting. And that led to just a giant hush over the crowd. And interestingly enough, Shaq would also foul out on a Kobe shot attempt. So they were sort of interlinked this entire game. But it was very interesting between, you know, how this was going to start and just, I remember it being a little disappointing for a lot of people. I think a lot of people, at least the people I was in the room with, really expected something like volatile to happen. And it wasn't, but it was still kind of cold. You could tell there wasn't necessarily a whole, like, there was respect there, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, I think comes right at the end where Shaq gives sort of, you know, a decent hard foul on a Kobe shot attempt at the end, you know, which he said he kind of later after the game, he said it was sort of he'd forgotten that he had five at the time. But he also said that, like, you know, no dunks, no layups, you know, for anyone, but then especially him, I think was the quote. So he at this point was not referring to Kobe by name. He would only call him.
Right. So, yeah, that's.
Yeah. So the Heat, yeah, this was, you know, right before, this was the year before they won the title. They actually were really strong. Yeah. They were 59-23, first in the East, but they lost to the Pistons in the conference finals. You know, they had Wade and Haslam and Shaq, who are, you know, probably the best known players from that team. They also had Eddie Jones, who was, you know, aging, but was still, you know, a key player for them. They had Damon Jones, who I think this is by far his career best year. I mean, he shot 43% from 3-point line and sort of became he did sort of become like a famous player for a while, you know, relatively speaking.
Yeah. Yeah, he was on he was a big part of the Cavaliers when they were really good as well. So yeah. with LeBron. So yeah, he was always kind of the assassin there for a little while.
Yeah, I think he has. He only played for 11 teams. He's very close to the record. Because I think the record's 12.
Who is that? Is that Rasul Butler now or James Jones? Not James Jones.
Jim Jackson has it, and I think he shares it with someone, and I can't remember who.
Somebody recently, like this year, I thought. Added another.
Yeah, Butler wasn't been that many. I think we counted the last show.
We did. Yeah, there's somebody. It's a current player. I know for a fact it's a current guy that's in that, but I can't recall who it was. But
yeah, actually, that's right. He went to Cleveland the year after this and shot 37% from three, which is good, but not, you know, 43%. You know.
Mm-hmm. And then there was one year I don't have it in front of me. There was one year where I think he shot real well for the Cavs, and it was a big part of that team.
Year he shot 41%.
Down.
I mean, you know, he was fine for the Cavs for the role that they were asking him to play.
But this was he was a big time. He was like a starter on this team. Like so that's
right. I mean, yeah, he was really heavy. But he was important for, you know, spacing the floor for what they were doing. So
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it worked out. And this was a Stan Van Gundy team, so. He obviously, you know, floor spacing's a premium for, you know, even at that point.
Right.
Actually, Rasul Butler.
Which makes sense now that he's playing on the coaching the Detroit Pistons, because there's one team that
right
that shows you what floor spacing is all about.
I think they might be trying to figure that out. But Rasul Butler was actually pretty big on the team too. Keon Dueling, and they had a bunch of old guys who didn't do much. Christian Laettner. Alonzo Mourning, who was injured but would later be kind of an important part of the next year. Wesley Person, Steve Smith.
It's a very weird. You can tell. I mean, the difference between this and the title-winning team is pretty unique because you got guys, you know, like the Christian Laettners and Shannon Andersons of the world. Like, definitely the old change of the guard. This is a fun team if you're a 90s basketball fan, though.
Yeah, or 2000s basketball fan. Well, right. Oh, yeah. I guess these were guys from
there are a lot of
90s.
Guys. I mean, there's
the
a
90s.
Lot of, okay. Yeah, there's a lot of those guys.
Gotcha, yes.
Yeah, like you get a Steve Smith, a Leitner, a Shannon Anderson, a Jones, a Wesley Person. Like, that's an all-star team.
At one point, they had, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Shaq, Leitner, and Mourning were the top three picks in the 92 draft. Is that right?
Oh, that is right. I remember that. Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. Yeah, let me find out for sure. But I thought that was something that was kind of funny that they had.
Yeah, too bad they didn't have Jim Jackson because he was number four. Yeah.
So rounded it out. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yeah. 1, 2, and 3. So
at some point they had LaFonso Ellis, right? Was he ever a
– I don't believe.
He was a Heat. And this year, 2002,
2003.
All right,
well,
oh, no.
Oh, 04, 05.
Damn it. Damn it. Why did they keep him?
Yeah. It would have been great. Yeah,
it's
missed out a chance at history.
And all you need is Jimmy Jackson. You can call Jimmy Jackson. He'll come and play.
Yeah, I think he was with Phoenix maybe at this point. Or...
Yeah, it was I believe Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah,
he was either Phoenix
or the
Rockets.
Was with the Rockets.
Phoenix or the Rockets.
Yeah, he would go to Phoenix the next year, I think. So.
And it was 2 years prior that he was with the Heat. Oh, man,
right.
What a missed opportunity.
Did they have LaFonso Ellis and Jim Jackson at the same time?
I think so.
Wow.
God, we're right there, right on the cusp.
Yeah, Pat Riley loves 1992.
Right.
Yeah. Wade played really well in this game too. We don't have that in the highlights because all the highlights are Shaq or Kobe, but he had 29 points, 10 assists. Eddie Jones played pretty well. He had 4 three-pointers, 18 points. Was just sort of at the end of his being good. He's another guy, kind of forgotten guy because he played with the Lakers at the wrong time, I guess. But he
sort of missed out on every team's like – big, like he would leave the team and then they would have like prolonged success or whatever, which is interesting because he's not a bad, I mean, he's a really, really good player, but yeah, he sort of gets lost in the shuffle because there's just, he's not definable by any, you know, and I mean, he's not definable by any, there's not a long playoff run or a long series or whatever that we remember him or remember this great NBA Finals game that, you know, Eddie Jones had. He's just kind of a guy that was there and did his job, but he's always a guy that I you know, when I talk with people, is a guy that really just doesn't get his due, I don't think.
Yeah.
He's a really good player for a lot of years.
He was traded. Did B.J. Armstrong play for the Lakers?
I don't remember.
B.J. Armstrong, J.R. Reed, and Glenn Rice.
I don't remember the B.J. Armstrong era, but
he must have been cut because he was part of the trade, but he never played for.
What year was this?
This would have been 99 to 2000, or this would have been the 99 season. He was traded from the Lakers to the Hornets in the middle of that year, along with Eldon Candle for Armstrong, J.R. Reed, and Glenn Rice. And, of course, J.R. Reed and Glenn Rice, I remember being with the Lakers. But, B.J.
Yeah, it looks like B.J., no
he
games.
He must have gotten cut or what have you. So.
Yeah, let's see. He was traded and then waived the same
day. There you go.
So, yeah.
Well, there you go.
And then he signed as a free agent with the Magic. So.
Yeah. He was part of some he was part of – like three, like lots of players trades. Of course, he was part of that, the one we talked about in the Jason Williams episode, the 5-team trade.
Yeah, right.
And he was also traded along with Ricky Davis, Dale Ellis, and Anthony Mason to the Heat for P.J. Brown, Rodney Buford, Tim James, Jamal Mashburn, and Otis Thorpe.
Nice.
That's a large trade. You don't usually see that many trades with that many guys who actually like kind of play. Like,
yeah, those are all like good play. Like, that's a real, like, we talk about challenge trade. That's a challenge trade. Like, here's like six guys that aren't very good. Like, or like, not very good, but like guys that just like, yeah, we don't like our role players. You want our role players? Yeah, let's see how this works out. Let's
right.
Just, like,
yeah. I mean, there's
a role player swap. Yeah,
you know, five or six guys who were at least a certain point NBA, good NBA players, you know,
currently trying to relive the Eddie Jones Mavericks era. I have no memories of that whatsoever.
Yeah, I barely.
There's like three much. Google images of that. I don't remember that happening whatsoever. But
there you go. That's.
But it did.
It did. Well, basketball.
It did happen. I can confirm that it did happen.
Basketball reference would not lie to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, anything more about this game? That I guess the Lakers were. This was. Not a good season for them. They were 34-48. This was like their first losing season in forever. They may have had one in the 90s, but I mean, but other than that, Rudy T ended up leaving, 2/3 of the way through the season. Kobe got hurt toward the end, so they tanked for. Oh, I'm sorry. No, the Lakers don't tank.
Sorry.
They lost a bunch of games in a row, not trying to do that, and then ended up drafting 10th and getting Andrew Bynum. which it wasn't like they were looking for Andrew Bynum necessarily. He ended up being, you know, really great for or really good for a while.
Yeah, lottery picks are good.
Yeah.
Lottery picks are fun. Yeah. So sometimes it is beneficial to
to not necessarily put out the team.
Right. So sometimes miss the playoffs is a benefit.
Yeah.
So yeah, to not be the 8th seed and instead just go to lottery, sometimes it works out.
Right.
But it's unfortunate that it's a recent trend that the 76ers have started.
Yeah,
so those rat bastards. But not a whole lot else to say about this game. It went over overtime. Shaq missed overtime because he had fouled out just prior to that. Kobe Bryant missed a shot at the end of the game to seal the victory for Miami.
Yeah, he had 42, 6 assists and 3 rebounds, but 9 turnovers.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he had nine turnovers and an insane. He had 45% usage rate in this game. So just this is the mid-2000s Lakers.
Yeah.
Until Gasol would get there and a few of the other guys, it was the Kobe show.
I mean, they owed him, but they didn't have much talent other than that, especially with Butler out. So
right. So this was Kobe doing Kobe things. I thought an interesting thing. The Lakers had 4 total bench points in this game, 2 from Brian Cook and 2 from someone named Tierra Brown.
I believe Tierra Brown had a headband. That's
okay. I know nothing.
Vaguely remember him from the video. I had NBA Live from this year. So I vaguely remember from that. But beyond that, no.
Did he have like a purple headband, and that's how you would remember?
I think he had a yellow one in this case.
Okay, all right, yellow. Okay, they're always good. Like I always do remember some. Like you have like a Smush Parker or whatever. I always remember him because the guys that wear headbands with the Lakers always stand out a little bit. Because they're like cool colors. They're not like white or black or blue or whatever. They're like purple or yellow or whatever. They're very stand. You know, they stand out a lot.
Good.
But I have no memories of Tierra Brown.
Do we have fewer headband players now than we used to?
Absolutely, absolutely. It was mid 2000s. I don't know if you remember. Was a huge headband era.
Yeah,
like everybody was headbands. Yeah, and I thought.
I feel like we've there's been a slow decline in headbands over the years.
They're annoying. Have you ever played with one?
I have not.
It's irritating.
Yeah.
Like I sweat a ton, so I used to try to wear them, but I hate them. They would just get too that would just be really sweaty then the whole time.
Oh yeah,
like, this is equally uncomfortable. Like now just my head is completely filled with sweat or whatever.
Well,
but yeah,
maybe their headbands may be made of more expensive material that might actually.
No, I got the I bought this from Sports Authority, sir. This is NBA branded. No, but no, it was kind of interesting for that. And then which is surprising because you would think that LeBron would sort of start a renaissance of it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Right.
We're the best player in the league. I mean, like Michael Jordan's bald, and then all of a sudden everybody's comfortable being bald, and like bald is in. You know, that's like a fashion trend of the '90s is people being bald, and they attribute a lot of that to the best athlete, being bald or whatever. LeBron wears a headband, and everyone's just like, we don't like headbands, but it's okay.
Yeah,
it's also the high fashion NBAs, and maybe headbands aren't high
headbands
fashion.
Headbands aren't cool anymore. Yeah.
Like Russell Westbrook's not gonna wear a headband.
No.
Like, come on.
That's interesting. It just occurred to me.
Headbands were a huge thing. I don't know if you remember, there was that one Charlotte Hornets team, I think 2001, where they just all wore headbands. It was the Baron Davis, like Eddie Robinson. And that was the thing. They rallied around a headband, and like everybody in the crowd was wearing headbands.
Yeah.
I just remember that being like such an early 2000s thing. It's like the Charlotte Hornets, and everybody is wearing headbands.
2004, 2005 Hawks, my favorite topic. In their final game, they actually all wore headbands. Like this included Tom.
Sign of beauty for being a bad team.
This included like Tom Gugliotta. Like every single player on that team. Wore a headband in the final game. Josh Childress, Tony Delk, Jason Collier,
What was the reason? Why?
I think it was just some sort of unity thing.
Like, unity, you suck. You're terrible.
Well, just like, let's...
You can't have unity if you're awful.
Let's get one more win. I don't know. I mean,
That's terrible.
We care about each other. I don't know. It was strange, but they...
You can't do that when you're terrible. You can do that when you're in the playoffs. You're like, what are you rallying behind? You're terrible.
I mean, well, let's not be harsh here. Oh. 13-69, that's,
It's not bad.
It's not the worst team ever.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. So yeah.
There are worse. Not many, but there are.
Yeah, there are some worse. So,
topic for a future day.
We
found out that they're not the worst.
So, listeners, thank you for picking this show. It was very close between this and the Bernard King 60-point game, which we also considered discussing, but decided to – that was kind of close to our last Michael Ray Richardson podcast, right. So we decided to kind of go a different direction for this one, although that's a fun game for sure. I guess we can go to our final game.
Yeah, absolutely. And the final game here is one that my pick – And a game that's famous for a lot of reasons. I mean, obviously, this is one that I just remember loving, and it was a big deal. I mean, this was appointment television for a lot of people, especially me being a Bulls fan. But the Chicago Bulls, Los Angeles Lakers, 2011. This game is particularly significant because it is the first game for both of these teams. The lockout shortened season of 2011, the game started on Christmas Day, which I don't know if you remember, but that was just a monumental. That was like, you know, this season, like, I don't like the lockout. I mean, lockouts are obviously bad, but this is my favorite NBA season because, like, the games were so compact. I mean, obviously, the season got shrunk to six games. Everything was so compact that there was, like, a game every day, which was awesome. The, you know, this starting on Christmas was also cool because it made these Christmas games that much bigger of a deal. It was like, this is the beginning of the NBA season. It seemed like more people were into the NBA because it's sort of, you always have that first, you know, October and November and stuff is big. People are watching the NFL and stuff. But by this time, I mean, by December, late December, January, especially here in Chicago, you probably have given up on the NFL season. So everybody's sort of into, you know, the teams. And I think in general, most teams that are out of it, their fan bases tend to kind of move on to other sports. And that's why basketball seems to always sort of get this uptick, you know, around Christmas or after Christmas, because that's a lot of times when people consider that season sort of becoming a big deal and really start following it. So it was interesting to have this first game of the year be that Christmas game. I just remember it being just a huge event. Real quickly, I wanted to just kind of go over the lockout for people that aren't familiar or don't remember. But as I mentioned, you know, turned the season from 82 games to 66. The main objections were salary structure and basketball-related income split, which is BRI, which was the big buzzword kind of around that time. Owners at this time wanted to implement a hard salary cap and harsher penalties for going over the luxury tax or going into the luxury tax. Obviously, players wanted to keep the soft salary structure because more money if it's you know, a soft salary structure. So this is the beginning. This is every lockout ever, is kind of the same stuff that sort of sort of discussed and bandied about. The lockout was ended on December 8th, so that everybody was okay. It was a 49-51 BRI split, which the owners wanted some. I think they wanted like something like 40 or 47 to something. So 49-51, it's minute little point, you know, percentages, but when you're talking about millions, it's a pretty big deal. A few other things that were added in this lockout that we sort of take for granted: the one-time amnesty exemption, which was a great, at least in my opinion, I enjoyed the amnesty exemption where you could, you know, waive a player obviously and remove him from your salary cap. And in the theme of this game, which is a good kind of segue, it started the Derrick Rose rule, which we sort of have heard about a little bit. Paul George is a famous guy who recently was signed under it, and some other guys as well, that a player finishing his rookie contract can re-sign for up to 30% of his team's salary cap, and that's up from 5%, what it was prior. It used to be 25%. If he was either a two-time All-Star, twice voted the All-NBA team, or if he won an MVP award prior to his rookie contract ending. So an interesting little number there that they added in the Derrick Rose role, which fits us into this game, which obviously this was Derrick Rose-led Chicago Bulls, the Los Angeles Lakers. For all this stuff about it being a bigger game because it was on Christmas and it was the opening day, this is a big game, you know, no matter when it was. If it was just a Christmas game in any other season, it was a big deal. The Lakers the prior year had been knocked out of the playoffs by the Dallas Mavericks. We'll get to a famous, you know, Andrew Bynum famously had a ridiculous flagrant foul against J.J. Barea that actually knocked him out of this game. He was still suspended. The Bulls the prior year were this kind of surprise team of the NBA. They had the best record, you know, kind of came out of nowhere, had the best record. Derrick Rose won the MVP, and they got all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals before falling to the Miami Heat. This was the big three, the first year of the big three Miami Heat. Obviously, Dallas won the NBA Finals that year. The Miami Heat would win the NBA Finals in this year. But, yeah, the story of the game was obviously just the reigning MVP Derrick Rose taking on Kobe Bryant. In sort of, you know, the Lakers are still, they had won their, you know, prior two titles in the 3 years before that. You know, this year, the year prior was sort of the slip up, but it was interesting to see sort of how are they going to do? Were they going to get back to their winning ways and become another title team, or what were they going to be? Because the team is still intact. You still have your Paul Gasol, you still have your Lamar Odom. Lamar Odom had left. Yeah, right. He went to Dallas, and that, oh God, sorry, Dallas Maverick fans. I forgot about the Lamar Odom at Dallas Mavericks. Yeah, so they had the Kobe. Andrew Bynum was out of this one, but they still had Paul Gasol as well. So
yeah, and this, of course, this would have been because they wanted to do the Derek or the Chris Paul trade.
Right. Oh yes, yes, yes.
So and the NBA, of course, vetoed it. This would have been, of course, the, you know, the chance to have Chris Paul and Kobe together. I guess they would have had Bynum too. They would not have had Gasol or
no Gasol would have been
moved. Odom. Yeah. So, so that obviously changed the fortunes of the of the Lakers, although they, you know, they tried to bounce back the next offseason with Howard, adding Howard and Steve Nash, which did not work out so well.
No, believe it or not, did not work out, even though the SI cover. I thought that, did you ever think that was going to be a workout well?
I
really did.
I thought they would be, I mean, there were going to be a few issues, but I thought they'd still like be really good. Like mm-hmm. certainly be a finals contender.
Yeah, and I don't think that's really, I mean, there was a lot of, obviously, circumstances that led to them not being, you know, as good. Obviously, injuries to guys and Dwight Howard not really seeming himself or whatever. So there were issues. It wasn't purely like this team got together and they were the same as they always were and just weren't good. Like, there was a lot of issues that went there. But yeah, sure. I thought that was going to be a great team. But yeah, this is a very interesting game.
Mike Brown's also this is his first game.
Correct, yes.
Lakers head coach, legendary Lakers coach Mike Brown.
Right. Oh boy, this is also another legendary Richard Hamilton's first game as Chicago Bulls.
Yeah.
So a lot of storylines here. Mike Brown, Richard Hamilton, let's go. But no, it was definitely a very interesting game. A lot of a decent back and forth game. Kobe Bryant ended the game with 28 points on 11 of 23 shooting. But similar to that 2004 game, he had 8 turnovers in this one. And then if you watch the highlights as well, a lot of key ones in the last part of the game. I mean, he gets stolen from Joakim Noah, just straight up steals the ball from him. While he's dribbling, Luol Deng comes from behind and steps it. I mean, this. What's particularly interesting about this game, and if you look at Kobe Bryant's usage rate, was 45.4 in this game, which is on a team that has some decent amount of talent, that's fairly high. And you can see, and we'll talk about it when we talk about the end of the game. The plan for the Bulls was basically just stop Kobe Bryant or do whatever we can to force Kobe Bryant into turnovers, force him into shots. The whole defensive, I mean, that was what they focused on the entire game, was stopping Kobe Bryant. And you know, he still had 28 points, but the 8 turnovers were a huge thing, and especially the ones in the late. Paul Gasol scored 14 points, but did not shoot well. As mentioned, the Lakers were without Andrew Bynum, who was suspended following the flagrant foul from J.J. Barea. Derrick Rose had a great game, 22 points on 9 of 14 shooting, including an uncharacteristic. I mean, this was the year prior he had sort of become a decent 3-point shooter, but he's 3 from 4 from downtown here. Richard Hamilton did not do well. He only scored 6 points and picked up 5 fouls. Luol Deng added 21 points. Carlos Boozer had 15. And Joakim Noah had an okay game. He had, I don't have it in front of me, but I think he had 8 points and something like 8 or 7 rebounds or whatever. So not a bad game. Derrick Rose hit a clutch floater with seconds remaining on the clock. So that gave them the lead. And then it's kind of famous. There's still some memes that are out there. Kobe Bryant has the last shot of the game. He drives to the basket, and literally 4 Bulls defenders turn, look, and all jump at him at the same time. And it's Kobe Bryant going up against 4 players. Luol Deng comes in from behind and blocks the shot. But definitely an interesting it's still a meme now that you know, Kobe is, especially this year, with the Lakers' fortunes, how they are, and Kobe, you know, doing what he has to do in a lot of ways. That, yeah, this is always kind of a funny one that you see, where it's Kobe Bryant just kind of rising up amongst 4 guys, and then the 5th Bull is looking his direction as well, like, you know, I'm just late to jumping, but I am looking at you and I am guarding you. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I thought one more thing to add before, you know, I ask you real quick. The usage rates of the Bulls are pretty interesting, because, you know, I mentioned Kobe Bryant had a 45.4 usage rate or whatever. The Bulls starters, and it's kind of a testament to how they sort of played that year and how they would play under Tom Thibodeau, you know, still to this day, the starters, here are their usage rates: 24.9, 22.4, 22.7, 21.6, and then 15.2. So an interesting sort of balance there where you know, possession, everybody on any given play in that starting lineup, the possession could end, you know, they could be a major part and a major end, you know, part of that possession ending. And that's always, you know, a fun aspect, especially juxtaposition, you know, with the Lakers, who was basically Kobe doing 45% of the you know, possessions were him. So interesting sort of dichotomy there between the two teams. So,
yeah. The Lakers still had meta world peace at this point too. And I forgot I forgot Josh McRoberts actually played for the Lakers. This was kind of before he got, you know, pretty good.
Really? I did not know that. Yeah.
Yeah. He, I completely forgot that he played. He's been around. He only was there for 1 year. And then the next year went to Orlando, then went to Charlotte. And it was basically with Charlotte for a year and a half. I forget when he got.
There was a Pacers year.
That was one before. That was before the Lakers. Yes.
Was it? Oh, that was before.
3 years for the Pacers, actually.
Yeah, I don't remember this. I don't remember the Lakers years at all.
It was just 1 year. He did not play well either. So, I don't know. He. So his career's sort of been interesting, because he's kind of regarded as good now, but I'm not sure exactly at what point, like, people were like, oh yeah, he's pretty good. Unless it was last year. And Kyle Korver's on the, he doesn't play much in this game. He only plays 9 minutes, but he, is on the Bulls during this season as well. And obviously was very effective for them. But it's not like, you know, not quite what he is now with the Hawks.
Yeah, no, now he's turned into he was good for the Bulls. Like there was issues with defense with him a little bit, and he was just a good shooter. But yeah, it wasn't what he is now, where he's just like one of the best 3-point shooters in basketball, and famously
too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he has really gotten good at a lot better at defense, and he's another of the long line. There's a long line of guys that have a lot of zeros on their check thanks to Tom Thibodeau and really, you know, him, a lot of, you know, the DJ Augustines of the world and Nate Robinson and Marco Bellinelli and Kyle Korver. But all these guys have arguably sort of done better, you know, once they've left the Bulls. But yeah, he kind of came in as sort of a question mark to an extent, but really had a great year overall with the Bulls. So.
And the Bulls obviously were 15-16. And then, you know, sadly, Derrick Rose gets hurt. Was it the first game in the Philadelphia series?
It was the first game in the Philadelphia series of this year. Yeah, the first game of the playoffs.
Yeah, so they end up falling in that first round when Rose is injured. The Lakers were 41-25 in a number 3 seed. So they had a pretty good season. Yeah. And then they
Bynum, if you remember, this is the year that Bynum just became a monster. Just an unbelievable. I mean, like, I think the first game when he came back, he had like 2020 or something like that. Just this was the year where he really put it all together.
He played the he did play really well that year, and
yeah, that was,
and gosh, and it's just like amazingly his career was basically done 2 years later. That's wow. He's 27 now, so
yeah, and it's over.
Yeah.
He's just not complete, like.
Yeah, but anyway, so he did play very well. So, and then they ended up sort of falling. They won the first round against Denver, but then they fell to the Thunder in the second round, and sort of basically kind of a mini changing of the guard. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. Thunder have underachieved in the playoffs due to injuries and such. They made the finals this year. They fell to the Heat, and then the next two they were behind the Spurs. Dealing with injuries on their own as well. But it was a great game. That exciting stuff in the clutch and Rose making a great shot. And I remember this game. I remember watching the game, and of course, yeah, it was just a huge day, and it was neat for the NBA to start in that atmosphere on Christmas. I mean, that really, if they could. If they could figure out a system where they started on Christmas, that would be pretty awesome. I just don't think it's obviously not realistic. Honestly, like I wonder, I know Thanksgiving is football, but I wonder if like they could have like a, an 8 o'clock game, like a primetime game and treasure the season on Thanksgiving, or maybe like even like the Friday after Thanksgiving. They start. I was thinking they started
Halloween. Yeah, they start Halloween.
Yeah, they started Halloween. So that obviously wouldn't work timing wise. But and there's no holiday that equivalent holiday in October to worry. No, Veterans Day is just not going to have the same cachet. So Veterans Day. Yeah. So
there's to find one of those lesser known holidays. Like there's got to be a Hallmark holiday in like mid October that they can.
Yeah. Well, the problem is getting people to have the day off.
Right, that's the problem. But
visit their families to stare at screens. So
right, but I do really. I mean, I love like this season in particular. I mean, like I said, I really this is my favorite season ever because it was it's not viable financially to do it, but just the compact games, the fact that like every game mattered so much more because it's like shit. We have 22. We have a lot less of these. We really need. The wins and losses really do matter a lot in playoff seeding, and just the fact that starting off on Christmas was just. It was a real good kickstart for the whole season where people sort of woke up and it wasn't like, okay, wait, who's doing what or what's, because that's what I get now every, I go over to my family's houses and that's what I get now. I'm the NBA guy and it's like, all right, so who's like good or, what's going on or whatever. And I have to spend like 40 minutes being like, yeah, okay, well this team's good. That team's bad. No, that, they're not good. He got traded and da, 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 da. Whereas this was like, and it was built up that way too, which was interesting. I don't know if it was like that all across the world, but I know in Chicago it was okay. I mean, this is the start of the NBA season. This is a really good Bulls team. Let's go. I just remember the excitement level just being just unmatched for this particular game. And it wasn't just this game. It was all the games that day. We're just had this just heightened sense of focus and drive. And the NBA owns Christmas. They really do in a lot of ways. But I remember this one in particular just being unbelievable of how much attention was given to it.
Yeah, and it was fun. I mean, it is fun to have the NBA get that spotlight and for it to be fun and for just to have that excitement. But obviously, like, the lockout was not fun, and losing those games was. But it did sort of, one side benefit of it, it did create a unique situation.
Absolutely. So we do want to know. I think one thing that would be fun if and I don't know when we'll just retweet it or whatever. I'd like to hear people's Christmas memories of NBA. You know, what's your favorite game? You know, what's a memory that you have? You know, as I asked Jason at one point, you know, what, you know, how is your tradition? What's your sort of Christmas NBA tradition or whatever? Because I think that's fascinating. I mean, it's just such a fun day that the NBA doesn't really get those as much. Like, we're all sort of, I mean, it's a big sport. Obviously, it's a huge sport or whatever. But I sort of feel like everybody, you know, everybody's got their football and the Super Bowl and that stuff. Nobody, I mean, the NBA Finals aren't as much as that. But I always thought of Christmas as being that one day that the NBA just has. And everybody, even when I go over to people's houses that don't watch basketball, that it's on. Like, it's good. You know, you drive by houses or whatever on Christmas and you see people watching basketball. And it's unique. It's definitely, for me, one of my favorite days of the year. Not because it's Christmas, but the fact that I'm getting just amazing, great basketball games the entire day. It's just, I love it.
Absolutely. Well, if you want to tweet us your favorite NBA Christmas memory, or just want to tweet us anything that you might think we're interested in hearing about, you can do that at Over and Back NBA. Also, the Facebook page, which you're would be welcome to do the same thing if you would like. Also in the comments of the this post at thepodiumgame.com, any of those places you would like to do that, or you know, send us anything, we would definitely appreciate it. We'd love to hear feedback on the show. And of course, check us out at thepodiumgame.com, and we are part of the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network of podcasts, which includes R-Squared and Biscast Ball and a lot of other great podcasts that you can listen to. We would certainly very much appreciate a review and rating on iTunes. That moves up our ranking and makes it so that more people can find out about us and check us out and then feed our egos by giving us popularity.
Right.
So we would appreciate that. It is very easy to do. Just to hit a button to hit some stars, or take a little bit of extra time and write some nice words about us. Or if you just like the other podcasts, you know, write about them. But yeah. So Rich, Merry Christmas.
Yes. Merry Christmas. And, to you. What are your plans? What are you?
Well, you know, we're I've got,
well, obviously, other than going to Phoenix after I hook you up with
Phoenix,
the Phoenix,
obviously. Yeah, I mean, we, you know, we got it. We have the my daughter just turned 6, so we are going to Santa comes a little bit early for her since she has two families to stay with, but she's going to have a Merry Christmas, I believe, a Merry La Loopsy Christmas, as we discussed at the last show. And how about you? Are you basically the same plan you described before?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, no, we don't do the my horrible after years of bitching and moaning. My dad and I have bitched and moaned every single year to not go to my mom's side. So now we don't do that on Christmas Day. So, which is fine. I mean, she doesn't want to go anyway. She was forced to do it.
Obligation. Now, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, my grandma passed away this past year. So now there's absolutely no. I mean, that was the one thing, is that she wanted to go see my grandma. My grandma had been in a retirement home years prior. So once she was in the retirement home, she was like, "Good, don't have to go." So so we just used to go see my grandma on those days. But obviously she passed on, and this will actually be the first Christmas for both of my parents. Both their parents, their mothers died this prior year, so it'll be an interesting Christmas for sure. It'll be the first time, you know, without them. But yeah, the plan is basically Christmas Eve, go to the my dad's side, like I said, do that. Christmas Day, I have no idea. I'm completely open at this point.
Yeah,
I don't know. I to me, Christmas Day has never been a big deal. Like, I basically just get up. You know, I open presents to my parents and I just kind of hang around and eat food and watch basketball. Like, I'm just a bum on Christmas these days. Like, sometimes, occasionally, like my girlfriend who works nights, she's working, she works at the hospital as a nurse. She's working all 3 days. So I'm completely, she's gone. So I am a swinging bachelor on Christmas Day. Usually I'll go to her parents' house or do something like that, but I got nothing. So who knows?
Yeah. Our plans are Christmas aren't firm either, because we won't have, we won't have Scarlett, but and we're going to Iowa right after that, where my girlfriend's family lives, to visit them. So, yeah, Christmas Day is actually up there, but hopefully there'll be some basketball, maybe a movie, you know, that kind of thing. So, thanks everyone. Hope everyone has a Merry Christmas if you celebrate it. Otherwise, have a happy holiday season, and we'll be back again next year for some great basketball nostalgia to fill your need for that. So yes, thanks everyone.
And money next year jokes. That was my favorite thing about like the last week of December, is people making awful, awful next year jokes.
There you go.
But this wasn't. You were fine. I'm not saying you were made an awful joke, but I'm saying it's one thing I looked forward to at the end of the year, is people making it like, see you next year.
See you next
like,
year.
Right. Yeah, like shut the
there you
up.
Go.
Like, shut up. Like shut off. Like why? I know.
It's a sore subject for you, I guess.
It is. Yeah. It's just so annoying. Like people, and every time everybody says it, it's like they've never, like you've never heard it before. They've never said it before. It's like this unbelievably original joke that no one has ever used before. They're like, see you next year. You're like, oh, yeah, all right. Oh, because, right. Because when we come back, it's going to be a new year. Okay. I got it.
All right. Well.
And then I have my voodoo doll and I stab him. So yeah. You can call the authorities if you'd like.
Okay,
that's fine.
Yeah, just so don't tweet us any see you next year jokes, guys.
Now we're gonna get 1,000 of
Rich
them. I'm sure.
Would,
so.
Be upset. Yes. All right. So anyway, goodbye.
Take care.